With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. TNT. You're with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
2023, Happy New Year. I wish you all the best for the coming year. I hope it is a great year for you. I am broadcasting not from my studio. I am still away from home, so I am using my backup kit. I am in a seaside town about 5 hours drive from my home. So if you do hear noises in the background, please bear with me. I do apologize. I cannot help it. I'm literally on a lagoon. So I hope you are also very, very jealous. The only thing that I do not have going for me right now is I don't have a cocktail to go with the vibe. I have a glass of water. I think that my guest would find it remarkably inappropriate if I were to be drinking while chatting to him. I'll ask him when he comes on in a moment. Please do send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. For all seven of you who are listening to the radio and not having a good time still, please do send me an email. Jump into the live chat. It's on TNT's website, tntradio.live. I've got it open in front of me. Please let me know, as always, where in the world you are listening. It's a wonderful thing, this TNT Radio. I have received emails from people all over the world, Russia included. And I'm a big fan of Russia at the moment simply because the West hates Russia. And I can say that because I live in South Africa and we are part of BRICS. So we are a schizophrenic country. We have one foot in the West and one foot in Russia and China because we have no idea who we'd like more. So we prefer to have our feet on both sides. Nevertheless, I'm very, very excited to get going with my very first show of the year. Murray, is it time? Can I go over to my
guest? Calling out the bigwigs.
The government works for us, not the other way around.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thanks, Murray. It's such a pleasure to be in the studio with Murray. Mark Sutherland, thank you for joining me in the trenches. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jim, and it's great to be here.
Well, I thought that it wouldn't be amiss to have you as my very first guest of 2023. You know, something lighthearted like eugenics.
Just to cheer everybody up, yeah.
How did the information war of 2022 treat you?
I'm really not sure. I have been putting out information about my grandfather and his fight against British eugenics since 2014. And I have sent papers out and said, hey, by the way, look, here are some of his personal papers. And I've noted, you know, you're interested in this, and I never hear back. I send out other information. I publish corrections. I contact people who do podcasts and say, hey, look, great podcast. I always make sure I'm very polite to them. And I say, look, there's another side of the story, and politely outline that. And I never hear back. So it's hard to tell, but you do see reactions from time to time. For instance, Marie Stopes International changed its name to MSI Reproductive Choices. I don't know if that was anything to do with me, but it was done about a month after I published the book in paperback. I don't think it's directly responsible, but they realized, I believe, that they had to get rid of that name at some stage. And so it's hard to tell, hard to tell.
Well, before we get into that, we have people listening already from all over the place, including Nairobi. I think that's a first. I am very happy to know that there are other people from the African continent who are listening. Mark, whereabouts are you? You're in the UK.
No, I'm not. I'm in Annandale in Sydney. So
you're in the UK.
No, Annandale in Sydney in Australia.
No, I'm saying I'm thinking, why did I think you're in the UK? You sound like you got a British accent. Maybe that's what threw me.
I have. I'm now an Australian citizen. I was born in Singapore and was one of those expat children. My father worked for HSBC, and so I moved around the Far East, and I was educated in Yorkshire.
I feel bad because I'm from South Africa and people always get my accent wrong. So I apologize for getting your location and accent intertwined.
Absolutely no problem. And sometimes people do say, you're from South Africa, aren't you? And no, I'm not. You know.
Well, since Murray is from Australia as well, you'll enjoy this. Right. I often get confused with being Australian. People often ask me if I travel. People ask me, are you from Australia or are you from the UK? I have no idea how they think I'm from Australia because I don't wear those hats with corks hanging off them.
As we all do. I put mine away for the night.
I've got to ask you just one question before we talk about the more serious stuff. I have an issue with this Tasmania part of Australia. I'm convinced, Mark, it doesn't exist because nobody cares about Tasmania. I don't ever hear from people in Tasmania. What do you think? Am I onto something?
I'm not buying in because they're closer to me than they are to you. And it's like if a bear chases us in the woods. I don't want that bear closer. Well, look, I have been to Tasmania. It is a really, really beautiful place to visit and quite remarkable because you'll be driving along the road. And then suddenly you'll see a sort of an English-style Georgian village. And you go, what the hell is this doing here? It's just perfect. But it's like Georgian England, untouched. So it's quite a fascinating place. Well worth visiting.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to this very interesting book.
Okay, well, I was born shortly after my grandfather died. And so I was named Halliday. My middle name's Halliday in his memory. And growing up in the 1970s, you know, the sexual revolution, people learning all sorts of things, I became aware that he'd been in a big court case in 1923 against one of the sort of stars of against Marie Stopes. And she was the person who was credited for giving women reproductive choice. She was credited for giving women contraceptives. And at a time back in the 1910s, 19-teens, poor families, generally speaking, working class, poor and working class women did not use contraceptives. And they were having families of 9, 10, 11, 12 children. And so knowing that background of the story, I thought, well, why did my grandfather attack her work? You know, it was presented to me as family planning. Why was he against family planning? And at this stage, I took up the story from her hagiographers and biographers, and they told me, well, he was a Roman Catholic doctor. No, you know, Catholics don't like contraceptives, QED, therefore. He attacked her work, and he accused her of exposing the poor to experiment. As I began to learn more about the story, and I should point out that nobody in my family or friends or otherwise corrected me, so that story I just told you was the one we used to believe. As I looked into it, I realized a great injustice had been done, not in the court case, but in the sense of my grandfather was, his name has been trashed in British history as a walk-on Catholic zealot who tried to shut down this woman who was being so reasonable, giving women reproductive choice.
Oh, what happened there? Did we go silent there for a moment? Are you still there, Mark?
I'm still there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I finished talking. I thought it's your show. I'll give you an
opportunity. Oh, no, please. To get a word by in. All means. No, by all means. I'll interrupt you if I wanted to get away. I was so enjoying your story. So please go on. So then you decided that you wanted to write this book, Exterminating Poverty.
Well, before I decided I wanted to write the book, I started to look into it. Now, if we set up the story, it's about archetypes. And so I'm going to tell you the first archetype, which her hagiographers and biographers present, which is a poor woman setting up a clinic in a poor part of London in Holloway in 1921, trying to help her poorer sisters, and this Roman Catholic doctor attacks her very, very publicly in the newspapers, and he writes a book. And under the heading Exposing the Porto Experiment, he writes this Doctor of German Philosophy, is giving them contraceptives, which are the most harmful, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was pretty full on. Why would you attack a family planning clinic in that way? The archetype, you know, the patriarchal Catholic Church crushing this woman is very, very strong. What I discovered was that actually they left a lot of the argument out. They left a lot of the history out, because when Stopes opened her clinic, it was a eugenic project. And it's not just a eugenic project because it's my opinion. If you look at her words at the manifesto of the CBC, the Society for Constructive Birth Control and Racial Progress, if you look at their manifesto, if you look at her supporters and what they said, if you look at what Stopes said under oath in the court case, it was set up to correct. Oh, it was set up as a project to introduce eugenic breeding into Britain for the very first time. On the cover of the book, I include a picture of something that you probably think is a nice bowler hat that you'd like to wear around. However, it's not a bowler hat.
I was wondering what that is.
It's a cervical cap. And so it's a contraceptives that occludes the womb and then blocks any sperm getting and fertilization. Now, can you see the brand name?
I can't see the brand name, but hold on, let me open your website. I think I can get a better picture on the website. ExterminatingPovertyBook.com.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, I'm looking at it now. No, I'm trying to find the brand name. I cannot... See.
Not to worry, no, it's on the cover. It's racial brand. And so it's like, hang on, that's, and her other brand was called Pro Race. Those are the ones she chose and created.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah. And so you realize actually it's not just family planning. And what she was in fact doing was she opened her clinic on the 17th of March, 1921. She was giving racial brand and pro-race brand cervical caps to the poor women who wanted them. And what she was also doing was she was lobbying MPs, and she even lobbied Lloyd George, Prime Minister, for the compulsory sterilization of the poor women and poor men who didn't want contraception. And so to say, well, she gave women choice, that's only part of the story, because you're leaving out all of the aspects. You're leaving out all of the aspects of eugenics. And so what my grandfather was arguing about, you've removed a large part of the argument to make him seem very, very unreasonable. The other thing you're doing is you're saying she gave women choice, but actually if compulsory sterilization, if the measures she promoted and really wanted and campaigned and wrote to the Prime Minister about, if that came about, that choice would have been made by the state. And I think, well, hang on, the biographers and hagiographers didn't include that. So going back to the archetypal stories, I thought, well, this isn't a story of a poor, defenseless woman being attacked by this nasty zealot. It was the story of a doctor who, long before he became a Catholic, was working with the tuberculous poor in St. Marylebone in London. And at that time, 50,000 people died every year from consumption. They died, that's tuberculosis in the lungs, 20,000 of other forms of tuberculosis. 150,000 were being infected every year. And when it was the cause of 10% of pauperism in Britain, because when the breadwinner would got struck down by consumption or tuberculosis, the family would lose its breadwinner and then they would become destitute. And so it was a huge social problem. Now, with those numbers, what you also found was that with those numbers, the tuberculosis attacked the poor, that the poor suffered three times more than the wealthier classes. So it was a disease of poverty. So one way of looking at it was looking at my grandfather, which is to say, let's improve living conditions. Let's improve, you know, he opened an open air school in Regent's Park in London, which looks actually pretty freezing, Jim. I mean, you look quite comfortable where you are at the moment. But this was an open-air bandstand school in Regent's Park in London that stayed open till sort of mid-December. It looks horrible. But it was a good charitable work to do. And the eugenicists, on the other hand, are saying, look, these tuberculous doctors are wasting their time. The mainstream view was that tuberculosis was primarily an inherited disease. Sure, it's caused by germs, but the only people who are affected by these germs are poor people. And yeah. Darwinism, survival of the fittest, social Darwinism, these people are the weak, and they are being killed by this disease because they are weak. Now, there's no cure for hereditary disease in those days. And so what they basically say is the cure for the disease is to let the poor die out, the tuberculous poor die out. And so you have in the late 1800s, you have a chap called John Berry Haycraft who gives lectures on the Milroy lectures on Darwinism and race progress. And he says, look, it's a harsh thing to say, but only the feeble are attacked by tuberculosis. So in that way, it's a friend of the race. Then you have a fellow called Sir James Barr. Now, Sir James Barr testified for Stopes against my grandfather in the libel trial in February 1923. When he was head of the British Medical Association in 1912, he was saying, look, the doctors have done very, very well and we've treated people, but now a lot of diseases have been eradicated and now we now to look at a bigger organism. And that organism was the British race, British racial stocks, okay? Because what eugenicists were worried about was that the lowest sections of society were producing the most children and the highest section of society were producing very few children. And they said, well, this is the differential birth rate, they called it. And they said, if we're producing the British imperial race, and boy, didn't you guys know about it at that stage? Well, how it's regarded. The British imperial race, if we're breeding from the worst stocks, what would happen to a farm? It would go bankrupt. And that's what they were very, very concerned about. So what Barr said in his speech was that Britain was like a garden. And now we were cultivating the weeds. He said,
Mark, can I stop you just for a quick moment? Murray wants me to go to a quick ad break. I'll be back with you shortly.
George Eliason on TNT Radio.
Now, it's a very interesting conversation because very openly discussing Ukraine's war crimes is taboo in normal society these days. This isn't the first time. Americans that are coming back that have fought for Azov, the International Battalion, and the Georgian Battalion are saying the same things. They're kind of doing it in a muted way because, well, in those cases, they would be admitting to perpetrating war crimes and atrocities. They admit to doing the police actions, rounding up people the Ukrainians say are Russian saboteurs, et cetera, et cetera. And since they've left the country, they say, well, yeah, you know, so they're Russian citizens. Some of them were hoping the Russians would come back, blah, 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 blah. But the videos the groups they were with put out shows these people being tortured or killed. This is the Ukraine that Zelensky got standing ovations for leading last week in the U.S. Congress.
George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Anywhere, anytime.
And it's just wherever you need it, you can just go online and get it.
Just tell your smart device to play TNT Radio.
I am broadcasting from a little seaside coastal town up the coast here in South Africa, which is why I have not got my main microphone with me. If you do hear some background noises, obviously it's because I I cannot help it. I'm surrounded by happy people who are still enjoying their Christmas, New Year's vacation. Also, just quickly, thanks to those in the live chat letting me know where they're listening from. Mark, I'm sure you'll be happy to know we have somebody listening from Namibia. This is a first also, and somebody is saying that they're listening from Ontario in Canada. PA, I don't know where PA is. Is that Pennsylvania, US? I don't know. PA, all right. I'm guessing that's the US. Who else? We've got Alabama. I like Alabama. Germany, got people listening. So we've got people listening already from all over the world, Mark. And sorry, just to let you know, I know things are a little bit disjointed because it's it's still early in the year, but I'm going to cut to the news headlines in the next 4 minutes. So whatever point you're going to make next, I don't want to be too rude and abruptly end your line of thinking. But do continue with your line of thought from before the break.
Okay, thanks. So Sir James Barr, who is a supporter of Stopes, is a very, very clearly a eugenicist. He makes a speech in 1918 called The Future of the Medical Profession, in which he says that the tubercle bacillus does a rough but effective job in killing the feeble. He says that we're not ready for its disappearance. And in fact, its disappearance would be nothing short of a national calamity. And so when you have 50,000 people dying of consumption, another 20 of other forms of the disease, 150,000 becoming disabled each year, 10,000 children dying from tuberculous milk. And this guy's the head of the British Medical Association. You can bet he wasn't on the phone to the health ministry every day telling them to get their act together and do something about it. And this is, you know, all in the British Medical Journal, all the information's there, and it's just buried as if it never happened. And so I wrote the book because I'm fed up with my grandfather being trashed by these people who want Stopes to be a heroine rather than the person she was. And I think my grandfather should be recognized in some small way for having the guts to stand up to these people, along with a few other people.
Okay, so basically what happened was your grandfather was made to look like a monster who just wanted to who wanted to promote contraception, and being Catholic, oh, he's now the devil, you know, because he doesn't believe in contraception. Meanwhile, there were added layers that she actually wanted. She wanted fewer people around. You know, she had nefarious agendas.
That's correct. She said in the trial, she didn't want to reduce the birth rate, but she wanted to increase the birth rate at the right part of society, right end of society, and to reduce it in the wrong part.
That is so awful.
Yeah.
And how could somebody actually think that?
Well, they were very, very open in what they said in those days about it. And in many ways, it was a good thing because you knew what you were dealing with. What you were dealing with. What they often like to say is, hey, everybody was a eugenicist back then. And I'm going, G.K. Chesterton wasn't. Hilaire Belloc wasn't. No, Letitia Fairfield wasn't.
You're right.
And my grandfather wasn't. And stop telling lies about him, basically. That's what I want them to recognize.
And I mean, every Catholic that I've met is absolutely the opposite of a eugenicist.
Hopefully, yes. I mean, I know that I am. Well, some people have some, you know, sometimes I speak to people, they take me by surprise, said I wrote a book, this is what it's about. And I think, but that's a good thing. It's like, no, it's not, you know.
Wait, you're saying you're not a eugenicist, just to be clear.
I'm definitely not. Definitely not. It's the thing is too, if you look at the definition of eugenics, Sir Francis Galton, if you look at, he said it was the study of agencies under our social control by which you can improve or I'm trying to think of the word, denigrate our society, our racial stocks. And so if you actually look at the things that actually improve the health of future generations and make future generations worth, it's something worth studying because you're actually helping people, if you see what I'm saying. So if you did that, you say, well, let's have free milk in schools. You know, that's eugenic. It's helping future generations, stronger bones, etc., like that. But where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
And you have positive eugenics, which is natal care, looking after children, making sure they're healthy, giving them adequate ventilation in schools, all of that stuff. I'm all for that. Under the definition, that's included. But also under his definition was included negative eugenics, which was to, you know, prevent people to say, actually, I'm in charge here and you're not going to have any children. Why not? Ah, because you're poor and your husband might become unemployed. You know, and I don't like the way that you breathe with your mouth open. And look, your son's got rickets. And it's like, that's not heredity. That's malnutrition, that's pollution, that's poor living, housing, etc., conditions like that. And so for Galton to come up with this science, which studies the agencies, it wasn't very good at actually looking at what was causing it.
Okay, Mark, let me just quickly do my news headlines. I'll be back with you now.
Thanks. I got news for you. I got news for you.
News. I got news. I got news. TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. The United States continues to stoke tensions with China after approving the sale of $180 million worth of weapons to Taiwan. Elon Musk has lost an eye-watering $200 billion over the past year, becoming the first person on the planet to ever lose that amount of money. And Ukraine's faced a grim start to the new year as Russia launches a blistering assault on the country.
For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Mark, when we talk about eugenics, what exactly are we talking about? Just for clarity.
Okay. You're talking about Sir Francis Galton's definition, the study of agencies under our social control to improve or make worse the race. But it's also important to see the context. So, for instance, G.K. Chesterton wrote a book in 1912 about eugenics and other evils, I think he called it. And he described it as one of the most ancient follies known to man. So Galton's manifestation was new. His statistical techniques for ascertaining whether it was nature or nurture were new. But the whole idea of improving the race through selective breeding, it was not a new idea. I think it's also important to recognize the progression of eugenics, that in some ways it started off with T.R. Malthus, who founded Malthusianism. I'm trying to think of the name of his book, but it's slipped my mind. But Malthus was effectively, he is a bit of a miserable so-and-so, actually. But he said, look, the population increases to the extent by which we run out of food, we run out of land. And as soon as we do, the population increases, you end up with war. You end up with pestilence. You end up with famine. Why? Because war, because we're all competing for the resources, famine, because we're always competing for food. And so he said, look, what we have to do is to control the birth rate. Otherwise, we're going to have too many people. We're all going to die. Now, that ideology, Malthusianism and Neo-Malthusianism continue to this day. Okay. The difference, just as an aside, between a Malthusian is Malthus says, well, we're going to stop having children because we're going to abstain from having sex. The Neo-Malthusians say, to hell with that. What we're going to do is we're going to use Malthusian devices, in other words, contraceptives. And so, but effectively, that ideology is very, very strong today. Now, when Malthus wrote his book, it was picked up by Charles Darwin. And when Charles Darwin was thinking about species competing for certain environments, it was very much driven and inspired by Malthus. And so he wrote Origin of Species and he did his work. And then it was Sir Francis Galton, Darwin's cousin, who picked up that work and said, okay, now we're going to study these agencies. And so it's wrapped in a ball as a progression like that. If you look at the sort of popular definition of eugenics, you know, if people say eugenics, it's often associated with the Third Reich. Eugenics, Third Reich. That's, you know, the fact of the matter was, though, the idea came from Britain. And it came from Britain. Well, you know, my grandfather took on Stopes in February 1923. It was going back to 1908 when the Eugenics Education Society was founded. And for the people listening all over the world, they will be surprised to know that eugenics was probably a big deal in their country at that time. And so, for instance, in New South Wales, where I live, not in London, we have the New South Wales Family Planning Association. It was founded in 1926 as the New South Wales Racial Hygiene Society. Oh, that's rather inspires a few thoughts, doesn't it? It was in Canada. It was in the United States, where they set up laws to compulsorily sterilize people. The Nazis took their inspiration from a book, I think it was by German or Swiss lawyer and doctor, and it was called On Life Unworthy of Life. And they wrote this, what they claimed afterwards was just an academic, you know, thought experiment, saying that, hey, it's perfectly okay to kill these people. Well, the Nazis seized on this and thought that's fine. And that's what they did in the Action T4, where they killed all these disabled people. And very much when the Third Reich came to an end and Nuremberg happened and people put on trial, the Nazis are looking at the Americans and saying, well, hang on, we based our sterilization laws on the acts you passed in California. So why are you getting all pretty cranky with us about this? And what you found was that eugenics had a big, big PR problem. And what they did was the British and the Americans and Italians and the Canadians and the Swedes, they're all sort of sidle off to one side and go, it was the Germans. It was them. They did it. And so that's what happened. But after the war, what happened was eugenics continued. Julian Huxley, Aldous Huxley's brother, and he was the son or grandson of T.H. Huxley, who was Darwin's bulldog. So it's all linked up. He left from being the chairman of the Eugenics Education Society and went off to found UNESCO. And so they all moved away, and then they sort of had a big, big PR problem after the war. Eugenics became really, really unfashionable, and properly so. Mm. Then what you found in the 1960s was their numbers had halved, and the secretary of the Eugenics Society in London, it changed its name, a chap called C.P. Blacker, was asked, what are we going to do? And he said, well, look, I suggest you adopt a policy by which we implement eugenics in a more discreet way. And it's a policy of crypto eugenics. In other words, crypto, the Greek word for secret eugenics, by which we continue doing it, but we stop people telling people what we're doing and why we're doing it. And in 1960, they said, yep, great idea, let's do that. And at the same time, the Eugenics Society increased their funding, gave big donations to international Planned Parenthood Federation and Family Planning Association in Britain. So they're now supporting contraception and family planning, but their starting point is eugenics, but they're not telling you that.
Funnily enough, South Africa also had its own eugenics program during apartheid.
Yeah.
It was known as Operation Coast.
Right,
and,
yeah.
It was obviously a failure, but it was an attempt to reduce the black population of South Africa. But it was obviously a secret thing, and that came out in the Truth and Reconciliation sham. That whole theater that happened in the 90s. But yeah. Anyway, the point I'm making is that South Africa also has its own eugenics past.
Yeah. And the thing is what you'll find is that people from Britain and Australia will smugly point at the South Africans and the Germans and say, oh, well, look at you terrible people. And it's time you point the finger back and say, actually, you don't know your own history. And I think it's about time. I think even after 100 years, I think it's an enormous scandal. And if you look at actually the progression, so I was talking about how they adopted a policy of secret eugenics. If you look at the 1967 or 68 Abortion Reform Act, there's a lady called Anne Farmer who I met during the course of my research, because she researched Halliday Sutherland. And so she'd done some writing and I met her, and she explained, and I read her excellent book, which is called By Their Fruits, and it's about the Abortion Reform Act and eugenics. And she actually details and gives you the identities of the people who were pushing for the Abortion Act in Britain. So the thing I'm saying here is not, oh, you have to agree with Dr. Sutherland or you have to agree with me, whatever my view is, and I'm not disclosing that. What I'm saying is this is far more complex than this just simplistic of, let's have contraceptives to set you free. That is an important narrative for society to continue to exist. But what they need to know is that actually the reason Margaret Sanger introduced contraceptives in America and the reason Marie Stopes introduced contraceptives in Britain was because, hey, oiki, we don't want you around with your malformed mouth-breeding children. And people should know about that.
I'm okay with saying, Mark, that I think condoms are a pretty bad idea in general. Now, I'm not saying that from any kind of religious perspective. I'm not even a Catholic.
Yeah.
But I just think that it's fairly difficult to fall pregnant, right? It's not – a lot of people don't understand this, but, you know, there's only really a small window on a monthly basis that a woman can fall pregnant. Generally speaking, that's the trajectory. So I think the idea of condoms in general is a pretty bad idea, because it also removes a lot of that sort of personal intimacy between two partners. That's just me thinking about this while you're talking. I'm probably going to get challenged from all sides, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, look, and they are perfectly entitled to their opinion, and I'm not in the business of attacking it. As I say, I won't disclose my own views, but it really is to say we need to understand our history to see what evil passed and to see that the narrative constructed was not correct and it needs to be rectified. Yes. Because the fact is that you're absolutely right. If you want to use them, use them. If you don't want to use them, don't use them. But don't be influenced by somebody saying, oh, well, you have these. Go, girl. You're free now from this thing. You know, because you look at actually, you know, when somebody introduces a program to you, they need to tell you why they're doing it. If they're introducing an Abortion Reform Act, they need to say, we want less defective children in this country, undesirables and stuff, because otherwise they're pushing an agenda. And by their own admission, it's crypto eugenics. Now, I'm not suggesting that, you know, something that might have been done 10 years ago or 5 years ago, that they're looking back in the minutes and saying, oh, we still have to do this crypto eugenics. What I am saying is that that measure was passed and they learned very, very quickly that actually this is a much easier way to implement their program.
Definitely. Okay, Mark, I have to do my last ad break. I'll be back with you shortly.
Nothing says normal like inserting a frozen stick of tomato paste into your surgically created mangina so that you can pretend that you're having your period. The war on heterosexual white Christian men proceeds apace. It's full steam ahead on all fronts, whether it's Black Lives Matter, critical race theory, trans rights, climate change, or ESG, environmental, social, and governance scores for corporations and countries, or DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. Unless, of course, you're a hetero white Christian male. It's unbelievable how this is allowed to be tolerated in America. But this is the left. This is the modern left. They need to destroy everything that made America great in order to, in the words of John Kerry, take us down a peg. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In a March 19 executive order, President Zelensky invoked martial law to ban 11 opposition parties. The outlawed parties consisted of the entire left-wing socialists or anti-NATO parties in Ukraine, openly fascist and pro-Nazi parties like the Azov National Corps were unaffected by the presidential decree. President Zelensky ordered an unprecedented domestic propaganda initiative to nationalize all television news broadcasting and combine all channels into a single 24-hour channel called United News to tell the truth about war. On April 12th, President Zelensky announced the arrest of his main political rival, Viktor Medvedchuk, by the SBU security services.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Mark, I think it's fairly obvious, though, today in the year 2023, based on the last couple years, there is no more crypto going on. Everything is fairly out in the open. Gates has openly stated there should be fewer people. Klaus Schwab very much echoes the same sentiment. The sort of global elitists absolutely want fewer people. There's nothing crypto about their position.
Yeah, and your listeners in Kenya will, in Nairobi, will understand that there was a big scandal about a vaccination program in Kenya. It's like, hey, what a coincidence, is sterilizing all the women. And when Stopes died in 58, she owned the leasehold to her birth control clinic in Whitfield Street, London. And she left that in her will to the Eugenics Society. Now, she could have given it to the Family Planning Association, and a lot of the women in the Family Planning Association were genuinely trying to help their poorer sisters. But she didn't want that because she wanted the eugenic agenda. What then happened was, so that was in 58, and then they own it in 1960, and then abortion becomes legal, and then a large amount of their income drops out. So by 1975, they're in receivership. Now, at this stage, an American and a British guy, the American was a chap called, I forgot his name. The British guy was Dr. Tim Black. And with an American colleague, they actually purchased Marie Stopes International, and then set up this international family planning business. And it was a business, because what they did was they set up a condom manufacturing company, which would actually finance their activities, taking contraception and abortion right across the world. That turned into one of the biggest and most successful pornography and sex toy companies in the United States. And so they were making a huge amount of money from that. And as I understand it from reading about it from the American fellow, he wrote a book about it, only about 15-20% are actually going into the contraception and abortion business. They operate, Marie Stopes International changed its name to MSI, Reproductive Choices. They operate in 36 countries. In 2018, they were apologizing in their annual report because they had a target of 5 million abortions, but they only achieved 4.7 million. So they had to apologize for that. And you think, well, hang on, sure. Contraceptive, why do you need abortion? And are you really, really going to these poor third world countries to help them out? Or is it because with crypto eugenics, you've now gone offshore?
There's a strange meta narrative, a philosophical argument that's going on here that's obviously the elephant in the room. And that is the idea that there are too many people in general or in your region and you need to reduce them. And my first response is, well, how do you know? How can you make that claim? And B, my gut feeling is that it's a pretty bad idea to take on the role of God.
Yeah. And interfere with all the natural processes that go on. And the thing is that Dr. Sutherland was not against birth control. He suggested using that method, which you, I think, referred to earlier, by which the ovulation window. And so he produced books where he'd say, right, this date, this time, and stuff like that. So that's the rhythm method, it's known as. And some people unkindly call it Catholic roulette, but hey, there are titles there.
It's also fairly obvious where the clues are. Like when your wife is really emotional, I'm going to get shot at. I am going to get so many emails now. It was just a joke.
Yeah. I'm not going to be going anywhere near Tasmanian women, so I'm not agreeing with you.
But yeah, I mean, look, in all seriousness, the idea that you need to somehow reduce the population, I think in of itself is such a terrible idea. Let me give you an example. So I often fly between Cape Town and Johannesburg, which is about a two-hour flight. I am not kidding, but I've constantly looked out the window to figure out how much life is under me right now as I'm flying. And maybe 98%, 99%, if I'm being concerned. Okay, let me be really liberal and say 95% of that entire trip, there is nothing underneath me. The life only occurs in the cities and maybe these little towns that are scattered in between. How do people come up with this idea that there are too many people? It's so strange to me.
I think it's because they confuse, obviously, overcrowding and overpopulation. I think it's because the Malthusian idea makes intuitive sense. It really does. But then, you know, with all the protests of the Dutch farmers at the moment, it came as a surprise to me that actually it reminded me of something I knew only a long time ago, that one of the smallest countries in the world, with very small amount of land, actually grows a huge amount of food. And so, look, I think it's for other purposes. I don't know what those purposes are. I just do know that they do not want life. Eugenics, also you have euthanasia. So eugenics is good breeding, good birth, and euthanasia is good death. And that was formed around the same time by a eugenicist called Killick Millard. And that's changed its clothes over the years. You know, T4 action, T4 program didn't really work out, you know, gave them a bit of a PR problem. But now you find all over the world, euthanasia measures are being passed by parliament. It's not popularly demanded. It's not in the manifesto. It's just introduced. And if you're asked, you get that Justin Trudeau style answer, Mark, it's 2023, you know. Okay. But it's nuts. I just wish these people, and many of the Malthusians, you know, like are not poor, have a lot of resources that they could share, rather than say, so just live and let live. Let, you know, they say, oh, we've got too many people. So what do? They poach a lot of people from third world countries, encourage them to get on boats. That's a brain drain. I'm
interrupting.
And if there are too many people, why are you letting in more? And so it's I don't know why they're exactly doing it, but the conflict is just BS, frankly.
Yeah, my apologies for interrupting, but I was actually just confirming your point that the people who make these claims that there are too many people are the ones in comfortable positions. You don't find the poorest of the poor. They don't go around saying, oh, there are too many people.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, they should be, you know, if we look the World Economic Forum, that guy is a Yuval Harari. You know, his idea that, you know, we need a society and people's IQs aren't up to the society we're building. It's like, mate, you've got it in the wrong order. The people come first. People are a source of wealth. Things people do for each other are a source of wealth and happiness in the world. And the simplistic view that it's all materialist and there are too many people, it just gets it all completely wrong. But unfortunately, they are at the they're at the end of society. They're quite close to the levers. And one of the things I want to get across in my book is really to make people aware of their history, not so they agree with Dr. Sutherland or with me or with you or with anybody, but so that they actually say, how much do I actually want to use contraceptives? And by all means, you make your own mind up without being sucked in by this fatuous, triumphal story by trashing my grandfather's name.
Truth is, Mark, that I haven't read the book, but I'm already a fan of your grandfather, because if somebody like your grandfather is the victim of an establishment attack, then I can tell you right now that I'm going to side with him. And I think that there's a lot of revisionism that is starting to come out thanks to conversations like this and books like yes. yours and, you know, the internet. And it's an important revisionism because, you know, the victors tend to write history and yes. we need to change who those victors are.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, your podcast recently on the Boer War was a real eye-opener for me as well. Because, again, the victors, well, I'm not sure who won that war, but the victors write the history and people still have the prejudices from that today.
Okay, we've got 3 minutes. So let's just quickly wrap up by promoting your book. So quickly, where can I buy or where can anybody buy your book?
You can buy it on Amazon.com, Amazon.co.uk or your national Amazon. You can go to exterminatingpovertybook.com. Where there is a just under 3 minute film which explains the crux of the story. And if you do go onto Amazon.com, the preview of the book is very generous. And so you get essentially a large chunk of the first part of the case. And so if you read the preview, you'll get into the story, although not the court case, but you'll actually understand what it was about. Generally about eugenics. So I'd recommend people take advantage of that freebie, as it were. The other thing is Dr. Sutherland was a best-selling author, and he was described by G.K. Chesterton as a born writer, a born storyteller. He said he's an amateur in that he only writes when he's got nothing better to do, but when he does, it could hardly be done better. And so if you want to read his stories or my research into the case, please go to HallidaySutherland.com and I can be contacted there as well.
Mark Sutherland, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you so much, Jim. Great pleasure.
No, it's an absolute pleasure having you. I absolutely love this conversation. It's really, really interesting. And also, I just want to point out quickly that there's an overarching conversation that can be had here. Also, it's not just the story of your grandfather, but it's a larger story of eugenics, population yes. control, contraception, abortion. These are very, very, very important topics, particularly now as we see what's going on. Anyway,
absolutely.
Murray saying, I got to go. I have to leave you and love you, or bye-bye. The other way around, love you and leave you. Thank you for joining me today, Mark. By the way, if you are listening, send me an email, jimwarfare@tntradio.live. Download the app. It's in the Apple and Google Store. I'll catch you in the next hour. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.